Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:28 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 23rd. And when we look at what's going on in markets today, I think a lot of what we can attribute the action in stock markets, in precious metals, can be attributed to what's going on in Europe. Germany's GDP looks like it's going to be negative again when it is reported in November. It won't be until November 14th before we get the next quarterly GDP figure. But the IFO index is pointing towards really quite negative business expectations. The PMI is well inside negative territory. EU manufacturing data is also quite weak. It came in weak in France again in here today. It's quite likely that Germany is going to be in recession when we get around to November. And that throws the focus back onto fiscal stimulus. German politicians have been extremely clear in trying to say that they are not going to have a fiscal stimulus. But that is really more about trying to galvanize their support among the conservative base of the CDU, because there is going to be a significant competition to see who's going to replace Angela Merkel. And that really bears no reflection as to exactly what government policy is going to be. The reality is Germany needs the stimulus. They are uniquely exposed to the slowing Chinese economy because of the influence of their export sector. So they need some form of assistance from the government. It's not as if the German government can't afford it. They've been borrowing at negative interest rates. So they're making a profit on every bond they sell. So they have ample firepower with which to deploy or to leverage their balance sheet in order to support the economy. That is something that would be de rigueur in any other economy, but there is obviously still a hangover in Germany from the events of nearly a century ago against any kind of overt fiscal stimulus. But it does look increasingly likely. Now, we have to put that in context of what's going on in the wider environment, because the USA initially tried quantitative easing. Then when the Trump tax cut went through, that was the beginning of the fiscal stimulus period. And the Federal Reserve attempted to limit it to fiscal stimulus, and that's when they started removing their quantitative easing, their monetary stimulus, and they took $750 billion out of their balance sheet in order to lend some stability. Well, what they're now doing is they've accepted the fact that there does need to be additional money put into the system. And what I find particularly interesting is you have people like Bill Dudley coming out and saying, oh, well, there's nothing to see here. But the fact of the matter is that the Fed's balance sheet went up by $100 billion last week. And that is a meaningful low. It really does suggest that we have seen the low in terms of the Fed's balance sheet and that it is going to be rising from here. That's quite apart from any additional quantitative easing that it will attempt to do. It's normal central bank procedure to add liquidity when it is needed and to ensure that there is enough of liquidity in the system to for the financial system to operate on a smooth basis and to allow for growth in the economy. Well, what that suggests is we are going to see additional increases in the size of the balance sheet. There is going to be continued fiscal stimulus, and it holds out the prospect of additional quantitative easing on behalf of the Federal Reserve. What we're seeing in Europe is that the ECB has already embarked upon additional quantitative easing. It's pretty modest in scope, only $20 billion a month, but it's open-ended, so it can go on for as long as needed and can be increased if required. Now the question for Europe is, what's going to happen in terms of fiscal stimulus? It looks to be only a matter of time before the fiscal austerity regime is put on hiatus or ignored or simply left by the sidelines and not discussed, and these breaches of the fiscal limits will be permitted. But it's increasingly likely that that will be the case. And that's, I think, the primary reason why we had a very meaningful move in silver and in platinum today. But gold is also firmer in here today. It is confirming near-term support around this $1,500 area. So far, this range that's persisted since the early part of August is relatively similar sized and in terms of duration, relatively similar to that which began at the end of June and persisted through to the beginning of August. Really, a sustained move below the 1475 level would be required to really signal that we're back in a deeper process of consolidation. The rather significant move that we had in silver today, where the gain has been improving throughout the day, it was up 86 cents. That really emphatically confirms support in the region of $17.50. When we look at this on a longer term basis, it pulled back from the $20 area and it pulled back in a pretty dynamic manner. We're now seeing evidence of it finding support once more. Now, there is still scope for some ranging, but it does suggest that we may now have seen the extent of the pullback, and that the most likely scenario is that the next time it gets up towards 20, that it may in fact break on the upside. Then platinum prices were also firmer in here today, and they initially gave up some of the advance, but look increasingly likely that they're going to push back up towards that $960 area. When we then go back and look at the daily chart, it got right up to test the $1,000 area, and the $1,000 has been an area of resistance on multiple occasions over the course of the last few years. It's a natural area for some reassessment and for some pause in consolidation, and that looks like what we're getting. It suggests that this is nothing more than a consolidation, and that the next significant move will be on the upside. Now, when we then think about the gold shares, they were also in positive territory in here today, and this is another index which has broken a reasonably long period of underperformance. That downtrend in gold shares following the run-up in early 2016, that chastened, I think, a significant number of investors from thinking that we were ever going to get a proper recovery in the gold price. It does look increasingly likely that we are now moving into that kind of environment, because investors need to have some form of hedge against the real potential for competitive currency devaluation. When the world is increasingly moving towards modern monetary theory, whether that is overt or covert, it is, or the process is increasingly likely that there is going to be some form of cooperation between the monetary and fiscal authorities, which is going to ensure that there are clearly inflationary policies followed, and that is directly threatening the integrity of currencies. When we then think about what's going on in China, well, they have a slowing economy and they are rather worried about the prospect of inflating the asset bubble they've already got even further, so they're trying to stop doing that. What we saw in here today is that the major Chinese banks have set up their own individual asset management arms, which will buy the non-performing loans from their parents. They'll also bid for assets in debt equity swaps from the regional banks in order to deleverage those regional banks' balance sheets. What it is effectively doing is creating massive bad banking asset protection programs. This is a significant step forward in terms of addressing the problem, but what it is effectively doing is allowing the banks to go and issue debt. Now, the question is, where is the money going to come from to buy the debt that is then going to be used to buy up non-performing loans. Well, Howard Marks, for example, at Oaktree was saying last week that he is in the market for Chinese debt, and he's looking at some of the distressed loans that you have there. But of course, the problem with investing in Chinese debt is that the strength of covenants is nowhere near as robust as it is in other markets. And the assets to which those debts are tied is really quite opaque. So this is still a very questionable environment. What we also saw in here today is that just in Hangzhou alone, which is in Zhejiang, they are going to put 100 Chinese or 100 companies under direct surveillance by the Communist Party. There are going to be Communist Party operatives sitting at the board level in over 100 companies, and that's in just one province. This has been going on for at least the last couple of years. It is a modern approximation of national socialism. That, I think, is something that is underappreciated by a significant number of investors. Now, when we think about the outlook for China, the private sector is tolerated only insofar as it can further the aims of the central government. The banking sector continues to hold this sequence of lower rally highs, and it is coming back towards the region of the trend mean. When we look at some of those big private companies, like for example Tencent, then it also has a sequence of lower rally highs since April, and it is back below the trend mean. And there has been a significant drawdown from the peak back in 2018, and it is arguable whether this isn't just a period of right-hand extension prior to additional lows. When we think about Alibaba, it was probably one of the better performers, but today's downward dynamics suggest that that's a failed break above 180 and suggest that there is potential for additional downside. And Baidu, which had been one of the better performers in following the breakout back in 2017, has completely failed to hold the move above 200. It's back around 100 now, and it remains in a downtrend. That's the kind of effect that the interference by government and the subsuming of the profit motive for major corporations to the wishes of the central government can have on an investor's wealth. And this is a very significant issue. This gets down to the very basic question of governance and property rights, minority shareholder interests, and a free judiciary. When you don't have those particular pillars of good governance, then the government can do whatever it wants. And that is exactly what is happening in China. This should be a wake-up call to anyone who's got an overweight position in Chinese equities. Because eventually, there is going to come a point where the welfare of the company and the welfare of the government are going to come at odds, and at that point the company is going to lose. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, well, the rupee was in slightly positive territory in here today, and I thought that was a particularly encouraging fact because of the corporate tax cut that we had in India on Friday. And we've had a meaningful upper dynamic here from the region of the trend mean. It suggests a low of at least near-term significance. The corporate tax cut brings India's corporate tax into line with the average for Asia. It represents the kind of stimulus to company profits that the Trump tax cuts did for the US corporate sector. It suggests that we're going to see additional upside in Indian securities. It also helped to enliven interest in the banking sector, and that is a very clear upper dynamic over the course of the last few weeks. It's almost right back in the region of its peak, and it continues to hold the region of the trend mean. The BSE 500 was right in the region of the lower side of its range last week, and now we've had this very significant rebound from the 14,000 level. It suggests that there is at least near-term support at the lower side of the range. It also suggests that there is more of a broad-based advance going on here. What they need to do is come up with a way of tackling the illiquidity that we have in the housing finance sector in India. That has really taken a toll on animal spirits, particularly in some of the more independent banks. So far, most of the measures that have been aimed at supporting the economy and the banking sector have been aimed at the state-owned banks. Then when we think about Axis Bank, they went through their own period of illiquidity a few years ago. They've come out the other end in really quite positive form. Now it is finding support in the region of the upper side of that underlying range between 2015 and 2018, and that was a big upside weekly key reversal last week and clear upside follow through in here today. So that is one of perhaps the success stories. Then Tata Motors is another interesting share because, just like the rest of the global automotive sector, it has been under rather severe pressure. Now it is back below the $10 area. We're seeing initial evidence of some support coming through, but it probably needs an uptick in demand for cars globally in order to really start to get people interested in the share once more. Now, when we look at what's been going on in terms of the European stock markets, the DAX today was in negative territory, but it's right in the region of the upper side of this range that's persisted over the last 6 weeks, so we could have some pause and consolidation. When we look at the wider Euro stocks index, then it's quite clear that there is a short-term overbought condition. We may see some consolidation, but as long as it is holding the majority of the move up from the middle of August, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. Now, the FTSE 100 is stabilizing here above the trend mean. What happens there is going to be very much influenced by the Brexit talks, or the lack of talks, perhaps would be a more suitable way of describing it. The pound has rebounded quite considerably from the 120 area. Now there's a short-term overbought condition, so we could see some pause of consolidation. The Labour Party conference decided that they were going to remain on the fence. They have basically seen the kind of trouble that the Conservatives have gotten themselves into, and they are going to try and stand outside that kind of debate until they've won an election. And unfortunately, that is exactly what the political parties in the UK are doing. They're electioneering at present rather than really trying to address any of the challenges facing the country. And that is taking a toll on sentiment. But the reality is that UK shares are trading at a significant valuation discount to the wider market. Now, there are risks, and there is a lot of concern about what exactly is going to happen in terms of the UK's relationship with the EU and the rest of the world. But I do think these are well priced into the market, and if there is any form of deal that is agreed to, then that should be positive for the wider market. Now, when we then look at some of the commodities, oil prices are a little steadier here. They're right in the region of this $65 area and the region of the trend mean. And so far, this breakout above the trend mean has so far held. When we zoom out and look at the weekly chart, then the sequence of lower rally highs has been broken. It still needs to demonstrate that it can hold the move above the trend mean, and so far it has been able to do that, but it hasn't been particularly convincing. The bigger question is whether we're going to get a further intensification of geopolitical threats. If that were to happen, then it's really quite likely that the oil price will sustain the move above the $60 area. If we see an ebbing of these geopolitical tensions, then it's quite likely we're going to see the oil price come all the way back down and below $60. The reality is that the USA is now the biggest producer of oil in the world, turning from the biggest consumer to the biggest producer, and that's an existential change in terms of the makeup of the global market. So that also helps to highlight the changing geopolitical environment that we have internationally. So I think the potential for oil prices to sustain a move above $100 and hold it for any kind of measurable period of time is really quite reduced in this environment. Then soybeans have been quite volatile over the last few days, but they were in positive territory in here today. And there is the potential that China is going to start buying them again. That's equally the case for pork prices. And the inflation rate in China continues to pick up. That should be beneficial for pork prices in the USA. That's despite the fact that the trade war is ongoing. The simple fact of the matter is that the USA is one of the biggest exporters of agricultural commodities in the world, and China is the biggest consumer. There has been an effort to try and source commodities from Brazil, for example. Brazil just does not have the production capacity that the USA does in terms of soybeans and pork. So that does suggest that there will be Chinese buying. When we think about what's going on in terms of the bond markets, then I think one of the most important points is we've had a meaningful bounce in terms of the yield from the 1.5% level. The short-term oversold condition has been replaced by a very short-term short-term overbought condition has been replaced by a short-term oversold condition, considering that the yield is the inverse of the price. And the sequence of lower rally highs on the yield remains intact. This is the biggest upper dynamic for the yield that we've seen in years. It suggests at least a near-term low in the region of 1.5%. And there is potential here that all we're seeing right now is a pause and that there is going to be additional weakness in bond prices. The reality is the USA has got an awful lot of debt to issue, and investors are not all that happy to get such a low return, particularly in view of the fact that there are efforts underway to try and devalue the currency, and that should command a higher yield. The dollar index was in positive territory today because the euro was weaker, but so was the yen. And the Chinese renminbi was also weaker in here today. The fact is that we're in a period of competitive currency devaluation. That's why we're getting these positive moves in the precious metals. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.